Welcome to More Life, the Reentry Podcast, where we explore the transformative journey of reentry after incarceration. I'm your host, Venkivia Garner. Each week, we bring you powerful interviews with experts in the field and the voices of those who have lived through the experience. Our mission is to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and personal stories by shedding light on the challenges and triumphs faced by formerly incarcerated individuals. We explore the latest research, policies, and practices while also hearing firsthand accounts from those who've been impacted. Join us as we uncover the realities of reentry, challenge misconceptions, and inspire hope. Whether you're a professional working in the legal system, a family member, an advocate, or someone navigating reentry yourself, More Life the Reentry Podcast is here to inform, inspire, and ignite change. Welcome back to another episode on More Life, the Reentry Podcast. I hope you got the opportunity to listen to last week's episode, which was the opening episode of our new season, Civic Redemption, Empowering the Formerly Incarcerated Vote. We started this season off with sharing a powerful story on the importance of voting and the impact that voting has on people who are system impacted. And one of the things last week that we discussed in that episode is the importance of understanding the history and the origins of felony disenfranchisement and what the laws are that we see today. So today I really want to have a conversation about those origins of felony disenfranchisement, but I want to start with kind of an overview. We live within a country and a government that prides itself on their democratic values and being for the people. However, one of the things that we do know is that there are approximately 5.2 million Americans who have been stripped of their rights to vote. Many of these individuals become disenfranchised due to having a felony conviction or being involved in the legal system. Today, we will be discussing the origins of felony disenfranchisement laws. We'll be talking about the significant impact of felony disenfranchisement in today's times, so in modern days, and then just spending a little bit of time on how they disproportionately impact people of color. But first, I really want to talk about what is felony disenfranchisement, because sometimes people don't really even understand what that means. And felony disenfranchisement is the denial of voting rights on the basis of a felony conviction. And we have laws today, state by state, related to disenfranchisement, reenfranchisement. However, we've also seen that some of these laws can be traced back to colonial times. But the felony disenfranchisement laws that we know today originated during the Reconstruction era after the Civil War, where very briefly, constitutional amendments granted Black men the right to vote. However, at the same time, as Black men were giving access to the vote, the Southern states were also devising tools that would prohibit the vote of Black men. So what we're going to be discussing today is that more in-depthly, and you'll see that across our actual next two episodes as we dive into the history and we talk about the impact. So when we discuss the development of felony disenfranchisement laws, we have to take into consideration the intertwined racial history that also contributes to the development of these laws. What I mean is that many of these disenfranchisement laws that we have mirror legal codes that were aimed to incarcerate Black people. And what we've seen is that since the point in which these laws originated, there has been a significant surge in prison population, with in the past 50 years, approximately 1.9 million people being incarcerated or involved in the legal system in some fashion, and approximately 2-3% of those being of voting age and are excluded from participating politically or civically. And felony disenfranchisement laws vary across the states. It's very different in Illinois compared to Arkansas. And these differences can pose many challenges for those who are system impacted or formerly incarceration, because the variation in the laws, they just create a lot of confusion. There's a lot of misinformation that's often given out about whether people lose their rights to vote or actually what their rights are. I'm sure we've all heard the myth that if you have a felony conviction, you cannot vote. And that is a myth, because it's not always the case, and it is dependent on state to state, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I think many individuals who are serving time or are, well, not I think, but just along with the issues of misinformation that may be given out, there are individuals who are serving time, are being held due to maybe misdemeanor charges or pretrial, which means that they haven't been convicted yet. So therefore, their right to vote is still in place. However, what we see with these individuals is that they have a lot of they experience a lot of challenges in accessing a ballot and casting a ballot. So today, I just wanted to spend a little bit of time of us going over this history, kind of giving you all a snapshot of what the history is of felony disenfranchisement and how we got here. So let's get into that. As I mentioned before, if we go back in time prior to the 1900s, we had already seen some of the origins of felony disenfranchisement. However, it was conceptualized under this idea of civil death, which basically emphasized that individuals would lose certain civic and public rights as a punishment for them committing a crime. We've seen this all the way back to ancient Greece and Rome, where this was transferred into English laws and then that were then brought to British colonies. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about this because more of the modern day disenfranchisement laws that we know really originated after Civil War and during the Reconstruction era. In 1870, Black men were granted the right to vote. However, as I mentioned earlier, many of the Southern states at that time also began adopting tools that were designed to prevent Black voters from being able to cast a ballot. And some of these tools of which I'm referring to are poll taxes, literacy tests, or grandfather clauses. And they prohibited Black men from being able to access or cast a vote. And much of the research that you will see out there will make this point. And also this point that accessing the ballot, or Black individuals having access to the ballot, was a threat to white supremacy and the political institutions that were designed by white supremacists. And there's a lot of research out there to this, so I do encourage you all to look into it. But one particular study that was done in 2003, where they actually examined racial threat and felony disenfranchisement in the United States during the 1850s to 2002, found that the larger a state's non-white prison populations increase the odds of passing restrictive laws. So basically meaning that if more people of color populated the prison populations in those states, that state was more likely to adopt stricter felony disenfranchisement laws. And we started to see that happen more often. So by 1912, there were 42 states that had adopted their first felony disenfranchisement laws. However, it wasn't until the 1960s and the 1970s where we began to see state laws channel and move towards restoring voting rights. And in 1965, the Voting Rights Act was enacted, which that added new protections to ensure equal access to the ballot box and legal opportunities to challenge potential discrimination laws or cases of discrimination related to voting. And some of the legal cases that I'd highly encourage you all to read and learn more about, especially to understand the history of disenfranchisement, are Richardson versus Ramirez in 1974. This was one of the first legal cases in which the U.S. Supreme Court became involved in that was related to felony disenfranchisement. Other cases that are also legal cases that may be of interest that I'd encourage you to explore as well is Hunter versus Underwood, which was in 1985, Wesley versus Collins, which was also in 1985. These are all cases in which felony disenfranchisement laws were being challenged. Now, they may not have produced the outcomes that were desired, but these are places where these laws were being challenged. And it was during this time when the modern disenfranchisement laws that we know today began and what shapes the current landscape of what we know now. And so it's really important to know the history and the origins of these laws, especially when you are in the fight to restore or expand voting rights. And it's important to know this history, because to know this history is to know how to help facilitate in the movement towards reenfranchisement. And there's a lot of history that's out there, and more than what we could discuss in this 30 to 45 minute episode here. But I do encourage you all to go read more and do your own research, because the research that is out there and what researchers, there's different arguments here. But consistently what I've seen in research is that many of these disenfranchisement laws do mirror those legal codes that were meant to incarcerate Black individuals. And if you want to do some more diving into, there are some particular states that you can look into in their history and better understand and gain your own understanding. So I'd encourage you to go look at the history of felony disenfranchisement in Mississippi, look at it in Florida, look at it in Alabama, and just research it in your own state as well, so you can kind of better understand what does it look like where you live and how did your state get there. But I want to shift us a little bit, because I want to talk about the current legal landscape and discuss what does felony disenfranchisement look like today. And when I think about today, when I think about today, the number of people who are disenfranchised has changed a lot over time. In 2016, there were approximately 6 million people that were disenfranchised because they had a felony conviction. That number has since decreased. And so the most recent reports in 2002 reveal that approximately 4.4 million people are disenfranchised due to a felony conviction. And I'd highly encourage you all to read the Locked Out 2002 report. You can find it on the Sentencing Project website. But this report represents the best assessment of state felony disenfranchisement as of the November 2022 election. So it's very updated, and it has a lot of information in there about the number of people who are disenfranchised and the impact of felony disenfranchisement. Now, I recognize that I've said different numbers here, and I want to explain that as well. There has been a decrease in the amount of people who are disenfranchised, and that decrease may be directly related to some of the recent legal reforms that we've seen with efforts to expand voting rights across the states. I know I mentioned Florida earlier in understanding the history of Florida, but also we've also seen in Florida recently in the past few years where many individuals there have fought to restore rights for those who are formerly incarcerated or have a felony conviction. And so that decreases the number of people who are disenfranchised. And so when we see that drop, research has kind of related that to these legal reforms that are currently occurring. However, even with that expansion, we still see that there are a significant number of people disenfranchised because of this felony conviction that they may hold or that they may carry with them. And this is partly because of the differences in laws and the policies across states. There's not a national law related to felony disenfranchisement. States govern their disenfranchisement and reenfranchisement laws. And if we take a quick examination of those states, you'll see that Maine and Vermont are the only states where it doesn't matter if you are incarcerated or what your incarceration status is, people can vote. Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. are also like that as well. Doesn't matter of your incarceration status. You have the right to vote. You're eligible to vote. That's not the case in some states. And similar to states like Florida, there are 10 states, a total of 10 states, that have enacted policies to expand voting rights to individuals who may or may not be incarcerated and have a felony conviction. And there's a host of states that still have very restrictive policies, a lot of them being in the southern eastern area, where their laws may range from restoring rights for all incarcerated individuals automatically after completion of their sentence to permanently disenfranchising people unless they have an exemption. And to look at some of those states, so for example, there are states where people can vote upon completion of their sentence. And those states are South Dakota, Idaho, Nebraska, Kansas, Texas, Arkansas. These are states where when you complete your sentence, you are granted the right to vote again. Now, as I said, it's not always as simplistic as I just stated it. You do have to look at what are those things that would have the asterisks beside it that may be conditions or contingencies on your voting. So even though I provide this information here about these states, it's still important for you all as listeners, or if you're working with someone that has a felony conviction and they're questioning whether they are able to vote, it's still important to go better understand what the voting rights laws are in your particular state. There are other states where only people who are incarcerated in prison cannot vote. So individuals, if they have a felony conviction and they are not in prison, they are eligible to vote. And you see that in places like New Mexico, Minnesota, Louisiana, New Jersey, California, Illinois. If you are not incarcerated in prison, you are eligible to vote. And that's very simple to explain to people. It's not that simple in other states. And then when you look at some of the states that may have more restrictive laws, there are some states where some people with felony convictions cannot vote. And this can be based on the type of crime that they committed or provisions set by the law. So, for example, Florida. Florida requires that completion of sentence. When a person has completed their sentence, they are eligible to vote. In the state of Florida, completion of sentence also includes payment of fees, fines, restitution, or any additional cost. So a person could have their sentence, theoretically have their sentence completed, in the sense of they do not have to serve any more time on probation, parole, any DOC correctional, community supervision. However, if they still have legal fees that they owe, restitution, child support, that prohibits them from being able to vote. So which is why I really emphasize that it's important to read those asterisks that we probably typically don't read. But when we're trying to know felony disenfranchisement laws and how they may impact the individuals we work with or our family members, it's important to read those things. It's important to know those things. And Florida is one of those states where some people with felony convictions cannot vote. Tennessee is also another one of those states. In Tennessee, if an individual has committed a specific type of crime, so for example, if someone has committed a violent offense such as murder or rape or even a crime such as treason or voter fraud, they are permanently disenfranchised, meaning they can never vote again. And so we see this variation in across the states in their laws and their policies, where some states have expanded their right to vote to formerly incarcerated or people with felony convictions, and some states still hold very restrictive laws. So if you want to better understand the laws in your state, I will have a link in the description box for you to be able to determine those in your states. It's an interactive map of state-by-state disenfranchisement laws. And it breaks them down and gives you the specific requirements of what you need to know for your state regarding voting if you are a person that has a felony conviction or if you're working with people that have felony convictions. And I know that was a quick snapshot of what the state by states look like. And like I said, you can look more into that, and I encourage you all to. But if we zoom out here and look at some of the broader things that we do know, what we do know is that there are still a significant number of people who are disenfranchised. And many of those people are people of color. And that these laws have a significant impact on their lives even today. So that leads me to this conversation on, why are we even talking about this? Why are we having this conversation today? And why do we have a whole season dedicated to voting rights and felony disenfranchisement? And I often refer to this section as the so what, who cares? And my answer to that question is that felony disenfranchisement, or denying individuals with a felony conviction the right to vote, just creates more problems. And it exacerbates the problems that already exist. Felony disenfranchisement strips these individuals of the opportunities to be able to participate in the democratic process. And what we see, as I mentioned, is that the laws disproportionately impact people of color, especially those who are African American, and in turn just increases the racial inequality. And when I think about reentry and the goals of reentry, which is for individuals to be able to successfully transition back into their communities and to increase public safety, it doesn't seem like felony disenfranchisement really aligns with those efforts and those goals. Another thing I often think about is international practices, and how if you look at some of the international countries and how many of them don't have disenfranchisement laws. However, the U.S. does. And so really these policies and these laws that we have related to disenfranchisement are really out of step compared to international practices, which is why this is such an important conversation that we are having. There are millions of adults who have felony convictions, who have been deprived of their right to vote because of that conviction. It not only impacts the individuals who are legally involved, but it also impacts the communities in which they may return to or that they reside, because their ineligibility to vote takes away the political power of that community. And many of these communities are underrepresented communities. And because these laws have been maintained across the states, we just continue to see people with felony convictions being impacted in so many different ways or have ongoing issues related to voting due to their felony conviction. And I don't want to say that there aren't states that are making efforts, because there are states that are making efforts and they're taking action to expand the voting rights. It's just we still have an overwhelming amount of people who are disenfranchised. And I do want to highlight some states so you all know that there are states that are working towards expanding voting rights. Specifically in Oklahoma, this year, they recently just passed a law that individuals with a felony conviction are eligible to vote under specific conditions. And so you can look up those conditions and it will have them listed out for you. Virginia also passed a law that allows registered votes for those who are awaiting trial or who have been convicted of a misdemeanor to vote by absentee ballot. So there are some recent changes, and there are other states and cities that are working towards expanding voting rights. And many of these changes didn't just occur in 2024. There are earlier years dating back to the late 90s and early 2000s where we started to see changes towards disenfranchisement. And however, I think even with those reforms, felony disenfranchisement remains a significant barrier to civic participation, and it perpetuates racial inequities in political representation. So this is the reason that we have this discussion today, just knowing that felony disenfranchisement is the reason that we have these discussions, is because of the problems that we continue to see in modern day due to felony disenfranchisement and the impacts that they have on people with felony convictions. So us discussing felony disenfranchisement is crucial. We are looking at the intersection of the criminal legal system and civil rights, and restoring voting rights for formerly incarcerated system impacted individuals not only empowers them, but also strengthens our democracy, because we are inclusive of every voice, every citizen that resides in the United States. And by understanding the history, the impact, and the ongoing reforms, that is key to promoting social equity and challenging these policies that perpetuate racial and political exclusion. And additionally, felony disenfranchisement is a vital topic in the broader fight for criminal justice reform and the reintegration of formerly incarcerated individuals back into their society. So I really hope this episode provided you with a brief understanding of the historical context of felony disenfranchisement and a snapshot of the modern day felony disenfranchisement laws. But before we leave this episode today, I do want to encourage all of the listeners to dive deep into the history of these laws. Understand how they've impacted marginalized communities and understand what can be done to restore the right to vote for all. Start your research today, share what you learn, and join the movement to expand voting rights. Together, we can all challenge outdated policies and ensure everyone has a voice in shaping our future, in shaping our country. So stay tuned with us to learn more about the season, and come share your knowledge with us on our social media platforms. Let us know what it is that you are learning, and you can also educate us on things that we may not know about felony disenfranchisement. But start your research and share what you learn. And while you're doing that, Stay tuned for the rest of our season to learn more about felony disenfranchisement. Come back next week for another episode in this current season, where we'll be exploring more of the impact of felony disenfranchisement on marginalized individuals. So thank you for listening today. And this is More Life, the Reentry Podcast, signing off. Thank you for joining us on this episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast. We hope today's conversation has provided valuable insights and inspiration for your own journey or the work you're doing to support reentry. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and continue to bring you powerful stories and expert opinions. For more resources, updates, and to connect with our community, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at More Life, the Reentry Podcast. If you have any questions, suggestions, or would like to share your own story, feel free to reach out to us at the email provided in the description box. Remember, reentry is a journey, and together we can make a difference. Until next time, stay inspired, stay informed, and keep moving forward. This is More Life, the Reentry Podcast, signing off. The content shared on More Life, the Reentry Podcast, is for informational and educational purposes only. The views expressed by guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the podcast. While we strive for accuracy, content may be based on research, personal experiences, or opinions. Research is subject to change as new data emerges, and content may also vary from person to person. This podcast does not provide professional advice or recommendations. Listeners should consult with appropriate professionals for guidance. Please note that some discussions may also have sensitive topics, therefore, listener discretion is advised. This episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast is funded by the Paul Simon Democracy Award. We thank you for supporting our mission to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and lived experiences.